This is the episode that I forgot to start correctly, so I'm going to start over again.
Boom!
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 11, recorded Wednesday, March 7th, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing this evening?
Pretty good, sir. Salam.
Excellent. And to my other right is Mr. Chad Merlin. The only thing you need to know about Chad is that he hasn't been here for a week, so welcome back, Chad. How's it going tonight?
I'm back. Neener, neener, neener.
Oh, if you happen to be new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where me and my friends come to hang out to talk about the things that we've been into lately. We gravitate towards geeky and sci-fi fantasy stuff, but we're not myopic. We cover everything from movies to television and books, apps and websites, and other fun stuff. And I am going to just dive right in here and say I had a very fun day hanging out with my dad. He came over for lunch, had a couple of sandwiches from Tim Hortons. No coffee from Tim Hortons. Just sandwiches. Made my own coffee. It was Starbucks beans ground in a French press at home.
Heresy.
Yes. But it was better coffee than I would have had if I had bought it at Tim Hortons. The reason why he came over.
So they're not a sponsor of the show, I think.
No, they're not.
Okay.
No. But if Starbucks wants to sponsor the show, they totally can.
Yeah.
The reason why he came over is because Apple made a tiny announcement today, where they updated two of their products, and me and Dad were watching it live on my big screen. Not the Apple actual keynote from Apple. It was the Twit Live coverage, Leo Laporte's network there. And Dad, the son of a gun, has won two iPads over the last 2 years. First, he won an iPad 1, and then he won an iPad 2. And I don't even know if he had the iPad 1 for a year when he won the second one. So he has two of them in his possession. One of them he gave to his girlfriend. So she now has a computer at home because her laptop was garbage, apparently. So I'm constantly running tech support for iOS devices that I don't own. I'm glad that I have an iPhone and at least that they're similar. But this morning I was talking with Dad over Skype and trying to get him to sort it out so it would actually alert and ring for him when people called him because he had somehow managed to mute his iPad. Hmm. And at first I thought, oh, Dad, it's just the switch on the side, but he uses that switch on the side of the iPad to lock the screen, lock the screen in position. So he somehow managed to mute it and he didn't realize he had. So it took me about 10 minutes to sort that out, but we got it all finished. But yeah, it's pretty cool. The new iPad is coming out. The weird thing about it is that it's not an iPad 3. And this was something that took a lot of heat from the journalists and stuff that I was that were covering it, that I was watching, is that they're calling it just the new iPad. And normally Apple does cool stuff and they're pretty, you know, market friendly. But really, like, you already have an iPad out there. You have an iPad 2 and now you're going back to just calling it the iPad. Like, you are going to confuse a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is really, I'm assuming that maybe when they get to the point where there's, you know, another generation beyond where there's only this one and whatever's coming next, then you can just call it the iPad.
I can see a real problem with Kijiji because I know when the iPad 2 came out that day, like, the iPad 1s were just flooding onto Kijiji and other Craigslist that sort of thing.
Yeah,
they were dirt cheap.
You know, someone trying to buy one and say, oh, okay, I'll look for a new one, and they Google it and they find, you know, the new iPad on Kijiji and they get taken for it, right?
So. Yeah, no, there's going to be a lot of issue, I think, with that. Or I mean, people are probably going to be identifying it as iPad Generation 1. That's what they do with the iPod Touch, is that there's no number on that. It's not the iPod Touch 4 or 5 or whatever generation it is. It's just the one thing. And one of the things that was brought up that I thought was really interesting was that Apple might be on their way to announcing another iPad later in the year that is like a 7-inch form factor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're going to identify the two different iPads. There's going to be the big one and the small one. If you want, I mean, whatever. It's just it's curious to see how they're gonna, you know, go about it. One thing that they are doing is they are keeping the iPad 2 for sale. They're not discontinuing it. Usually, with, or at least so far with the iPad, is that the other one stops being available from the store. You can buy it while stocks are available, but you have to move on from
that. Same price point or different price point?
No, it's different. It's $400 for an iPad 2.
Yeah, they dropped it $100.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. They dropped it $100 across the board. So for each model, it's dropped, you know, $100 down. So, yeah. Peyton, did you watch any announcement today?
I watched a little bit of it on the Twit Network thing.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, what do you think? We've got a high retina screen. We've got same battery life. We've got a dual core graphics processor.
Faster processor and you know, more capabilities with the HD camera and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And as well, you know, you can run the Avid. You can run on there now.
Yes, there's an Avid app. There's a new Sketchbook Pro app coming out in April, as well as iPhoto.
And then you also get the things like the new styluses that have the Bluetooth in the stylus that will allow you to do pressure sensitivity. So I think it's going to be a real boon for a lot of people who want to do you know, storyboarding, things like that.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you can embed this into an animation disc in no time.
Oh, for sure. As well as the for stop motion and that, I know the National Film Board of Canada has a stop motion app that's available for the iPad for free in Canada. In the States, I think it's like $2.
Wow.
But with this now, with the HD camera in it, you'd be able to actually film directly in the iPad a stop motion film.
Oh,
on a free software, edited on the system. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what people make of that now too, right? Now, a couple of things you were talking about, like with the you know, the idea of reporters and that using the iPad, you know, out in the field, it might not be very handy to walk around with this, you know, thing in front of you as your main camera, but, you know, you can do all your editing and everything with it. But, you know, you do have the, there is a photo dock or a camera dock that you can stick into the pin on the iPad. So I'm not sure if you'd be able to do like a live sync with it, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know about live sync. I know that there's like a camera connector, and that I think that's just basically meant for you to be able to dump your pictures from your, you know, Canon SD or whatever you're shooting into the iPad, which is good, you know, which is great for professional photographers when they're out there. But the camera that is in the iPad on the outside of it is the same camera that's now in the iPhone 4S.
Yeah, it's a 5-megapixel,
So, and it's not so much the megapixels as it is like the way that the light sensor is constructed that makes it such a good camera. I mean, it's 5 megapixels is still good. You're going to get your full screen depth and stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, it's going to be, it's really interesting that now this device is something that can take those pictures. And I don't think they're going to be touting it as like, you know, take this around when you're, you know, on vacation and you're, you know, you're doing sightseeing. I think more people are going to be inclined to carry either their iPhone or, you know, their own, you know, point and shoot camera because of the size of it. But it is kind of neat when you think about it from a filmmaker's perspective. And one of the guys that was on the Google Plus Hangout on Twit was saying, like, you know, one of the biggest griefs you have about an iPhone or even a Canon SD is that the screen that you're looking at, your viewfinder, is so small. Yeah. But now you've got a 9-inch screen, and there's, I can't remember the name of the case, but there's a specific case for the iPhone 4 that has an external mic on it that points at your subject. And then it has two little handles. You know those viewfinders toys from when we were kids?
Yeah.
You know, and you click to see the next picture? So it's like that. So you've immediately got a steady cam because with two hands pulling tension horizontally on the handles, it creates a much sturdier grip and you don't wobble as much.
There's also a really cheap way to make a it's almost like a tripod or a monopod, or whatever you want to call it. But if you have a length of string or twine or whatever that you tie onto your case, and you put a washer on the base of it, you step on the washer and you just pull up on the string, and that makes it pretty secure.
Same principle. You just need that 2 points of tension allow you to keep a steadier cam. Mm. And I would imagine that, you know, you can envision a case for this iPad now that has kind of two handles, you know, one on each of the short sides of the iPad, so you're holding it horizontally. And then you just kind of walk around with this picture box in front of you, and this is what you're filming, your short film, your YouTube video, whatever it is that you're doing. I mean, it immediately evokes the rig that James Cameron was using behind the scenes on Avatar.
The one that he could watch when he was...
Yeah, that virtual camera, So, I mean, there's a lot of really, really neat things about it. I mean, it's getting thicker, And a little heavier from the iPad 2. I mean, not by much. It goes up four tenths of a millimeter.
What are the comparisons with the original iPad?
Still thinner than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still thinner than the original, but it's thicker than the iPad 2. It the iPad 2 was 8.8 millimeters, and this is 9.4. So 6 tenths of a of a millimeter.
Do you guys think Steve Jobs signed off on this before he passed away?
Oh yeah, this was long in the works. Oh yeah,
okay.
This is long in the works. The reason why it got a hair thicker and a hair heavier is because they needed to be able to maintain the same battery life, and pumping a high resolution screen, a Retina display screen, on that scale would just kill your battery.
Oh, and refract, it said the LTE antenna too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's that's the other thing too, is that the LTE antenna for quote unquote 4G. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it really is 4G. Depends on what network you're on and what they tell you is 4G, but it's going to have a lot of different capabilities, so.
With the Retina display too, it also had to be thicker because the pixels on the Retina display had to be raised from the circuitry.
Did they?
It did one in the video. They're talking about how basically they're sticking four pixels in what was traditionally a space for one pixel. And because they were so small, so close together, sometimes there'll be the information will get a little bit distorted. So, and what they did to fix that problem is they actually raised all of the pixels up and then ran the connections, I guess, underneath and then up to the sides as opposed to just connect to the base of it.
No kidding.
It's in one of their videos on the Apple website. It explains it in a little more detail.
Right on. I didn't have time to watch all the videos, but that's cool. I did not know that. Everything else seems to be pretty much the same. I mean, the same price point, all that kind of stuff. The other cool thing is that, of course, it ties into the fact that all of the apps are now able to do HD. Netflix announced HD today, as well as the new Apple TV that's coming out. Mm. Same price point as the old one. It just does 1080p, and it looks like there's some software upgrades and some interface designs changes and stuff like that too. So that's really cool. Although I have to say, I do notice the difference between 720 and 1080 on my TV.
Yes.
Like, difference between watching a Blu-ray and the difference between watching Netflix streaming on my Apple TV is noticeable. However, I don't mind watching 720. It's only that I have 1080 that I know the difference.
Yeah.
The only thing that my concern is with a 1080 stream is that, I mean, I've had Netflix, not often, but every once in a while, buffer on me when I'm watching. And I don't have my Apple TV hooked up via Wi-Fi. I've got a Cat 5 cable going in the back of it. So it's not Wi-Fi speeds that were hindering me. It was actually just the connection to Netflix and the amount of data coming down. So I don't know whether Netflix will buffer ahead of time on their 1080 stream. I hope they do. Chad, you've mentioned before on the show that if you're watching a movie that you rent on iTunes, you know, for $6.99 or whatever, that you have to hit play and then go get your movie snacks while that's loading so that you have at least a decent buffer so it doesn't get clogged up on you.
Cook a pizza.
Give it 20 minutes, huh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you got to give it about 20 minutes. And it's fine. I mean, it's 720p, but at the same time, you know, that can get, you know, when you're talking about on demand, it's, you know, you want it right now.
Yeah.
And that bothers me. So,
yeah. I mean, and that will hopefully change as internet speeds increase and video codecs get better and condense things a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so Chad, what are your thoughts? You have an iPad in the household.
Yes, I do. I don't use it really at all. I'm like on my iPhone as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I have the MacBook Pro circa 2009 as my only other real computer that's operating. There is another computer in the house, but it doesn't get used. But it's for me, it's the iPhone and the MacBook Pro. My wife, the iPad is hers, and I'm sure I've mentioned that quite a few times now on the show in the past. But I wouldn't say she pushes it to its limit by any stretch. But actually, I saw, was it Scott Johnson tweeted that SketchBook Pro is 99 cents for the iPad right now. And I was really tempted to get that just to fool around with that.
It's cool. See,
is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the iPad, just to use my finger to do little things, right?
So. Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I mean, I really like the software on the desktop, and I do have the free iPhone version, but I obviously, not having an iPad, I don't have the full-blown version. But it looks like there's going to be some pressure sensitivity, you know, happening. in various ways. None of those things, I don't think, are official yet, Peyton. I've seen this is something we're working on from Pogo Sketch, and so 10-1 Design is the company behind that, and Adonit. Okay. Adonit is the one that looks really cool because it's got the clear plastic disc on the end of it.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, so it allows you to see the very tip of your pen, which is very cool.
It's a much smaller footprint on it as well.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So I'll keep an eye on those, and I mean, you never know if I end up having enough commissions come in, hint, that I might be able to pick up an iPad in the future, because I think it would be really cool. I don't know about finished work on an iPad, certainly not for print, but doing any kind of digital sketching and storyboarding or things that don't necessarily... You know, you need to communicate an idea, but you don't necessarily have to have it look, you know, picture perfect. I think that working on an iPad, I keep on wanting to call it an iPad 3. Working on the new iPad could be a really cool part of a workflow because, you know, like if I work on my sketchbook and I like something, I have to come home and scan it and, you know, do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And plus it would be so much fun to play around with like a million colors. I mean, you can sit in the park and paint digitally, you know, no muss, no fuss. Lots of really cool ideas. So Peyton, your final thoughts on the new stuff from Apple?
We've been interested in getting an iPad for the past little while, and we might actually make the jump to get one when it comes out. I think that's something that I could use in my workflow for sure.
Nope.
I also like the fact that you can take it and use it as a secondary monitor, you know, through air and all that. So you can. You know, you can almost sketch on it and sketch on that as your work area. Then you have your time frame for if you're doing animation on the other spot. I don't know if that would work over like that or not. But
yeah, and the stop motion potential for you is obviously great. Not to mention all the educational stuff that's available for iPad for books and reading for Ewan.
Yeah.
You know, when you're reading storybooks and stuff to them, like having an interaction thing that, you know, things like where the cow moves when you tap it and all that kind of stuff. For little kids, the amount of journalists that have young children that they just, you know, that rave about educational things on the iPad, it's a really strong voice out there.
I think that I would prefer to, for him to pick up a first generation one with an Otter case or something like that. A
little more instructive. Yeah. Yes. But I mean like, you know, the father son or the mother son time when you're both there and you know, you've got a hold of the iPad and, there's a cheap little strap that you can buy that's out there that fits onto most cases and it goes around your leg. So
it's
like toddler proofing the iPad so that when you're there, even if you're not paying attention when you're on the phone, he can't throw it on the floor.
Yes, but he could twist it and actually, you know, your legs all turn, you know, no blood flow to your toes at all, right?
Your toes going blue.
That's a monster.
Too funny. Anything else to add over the week for you guys?
I got a chance to go into an Apple store for the first time in a very long time. Not the past weekend, but the weekend before that. That was pretty cool.
Nice. Where was that?
West side of Montreal, actually. So it was pretty cool. I mean, it was in the mall. It's not one of their show stores. Like I was in the one downtown Montreal one time, and it was nice. Like it had the glass stairs, and you know it was cool to be in there. But this one was more of like the retail. What I would say it's like the bargain version of the Apple store, but it's still an official Apple store with all their geniuses walking around in their blue shirts and stuff.
Are they really geniuses though?
Oh, well, who was making the joke about Apple geniuses? Was it?
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory. That was funny.
Yeah, Leonard put a shirt on and went in and tried to pick up chicks.
Yeah.
And they found out and kicked him out of the store, right?
Yeah. No, it was nice to go in there. There was a bunch of toys in there. I saw the fisheye camera attachment for the iPad, the iPhone.
Yeah.
They had that on. I thought about picking that up, but I didn't. And there was a Yeti was there, and that was $150. So I said no. I mean, you walk through, and the first things that are there are the MacBook Air, the iPads, the MacBook Pros, the iMacs, the Mac Pros. They're all there. I mean, that doesn't interest me because I own a MacBook Pro. I know what they're capable of doing. I know what the new ones are capable of doing. So to sit there and to play with it, to me, doesn't do anything. Like, if I'm going to get it, I'm just going to buy it. Like, I know what it's going to do. It's a Mac, you know.
Yeah.
The my favorite part is going in to see the accessories and the games and all the stuff in the back that is available for that stuff. Because you can walk into Future Shop or Best Buy and look for a half an hour and find four things. you know, where this place, it all works with Mac, right? Or Apple,
yeah.
You know, yeah, so exactly. that's my biggest thing about going into an Apple store. There's nothing overly new that I could find. I mean, if you do a quick little search through the Apple store online, you're going to see twice as much as what the store offers, but the actual retail store.
Yeah.
But, you know, I knew, like Donald saying, he can't wait for the store to open in Halifax. I mean, I think that's going to be cool. I've seen that the leaked floor plans of it.
Yeah,
it's right up where in the top where.
Yeah. For anybody new listening, that's Donald in our chat room. So hello, chat room. Yeah, we record Wednesdays live at 7:30 Eastern, 8:30 Atlantic, which would be our local time here in Halifax. And we've got a nice little population in the chat room. So thanks for stopping by, everybody. It's always nice to give them a shout out on the show. So yeah, if you stop by the live site on Wednesday nights, you can join in the conversation, just like Donald and the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm. No sexy dancing.
Oh, yeah, Chad's reading the chat room. Fantastic.
we're all sucked into it there now.
And Peyton, what about you, sir? Anything beyond the Apple iPad 3 announcement or a new iPad announcement?
Just been working on, in a more of a traditional sense, on the old pad and paper, and that the concepts and layouts and stuff for potential for the potential webcomic that I'm working on. And I'm just fleshing out some of the storylines and trying to figure out what my storytelling style will be for it. So, and it's funny because, you know, I'll go one direction and then I'll read a comic, you know, like a Zitz, or I'll read, you know, something by, you know, like Calvin Hobbes, whatever, and it takes you two different directions altogether, right?
So, yeah, it is kind of hard to sort things out.
Yeah, just, you know, just I need to stop looking at other things because it keeps distracting you.
Yeah, the other thing too that you have to kind of take that leap of faith when you start a comic or a new project like that is you kind of have to just jump off eventually. Yeah. Like, I mean, I wasn't 100% happy with where StarCrossed was when I launched it, but it was kind of cool to look back over the last, you know, 2 years of comics and see it develop a little bit on its own.
Yeah.
You know, and some of that will be readers' feedback. You know, not so much that people are going to say how to fix it, but, you know, you'll put out a comic that you think is okay. Like, you'll be happy with it, but it's going up on deadline. And then everybody loves it. So you're like, oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll do more of that from the heart thing or whatever it is that, you know, got those reactions. So.
Yeah. And worst case scenario, you know, it is set, you know, growing up in rural Newfoundland. So I could just kill them off, right? you know, accidents happen all the time.
Look out for the moose.
Yeah. It's, you know. It's funny because it's unfortunate you hear about these things in the news where, you know, kids go off and, you know, they'll play it on the ice and they'll fall through, or, you know, some sort of industrial
sucked out into the ocean on the ice.
Exactly, right? You know, but this stuff it does need to happen every 10 years or so because kids forget.
Yeah.
They go, oh, that's my uncle's generation, right? You know, it's not going to happen to me, so it just needs to happen. So
yeah, well, and the funny thing is, I mean, if you ever get stuck with the storyline, you know, things get really, really, you know, you're tired of it, you don't like it anymore, you can just have them fall through the ice and then wake up in, you know, 2075 with flying sequence. Cars and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, just like Captain America.
Yeah.
So Chad has one more thing before we move on to the Winter is Coming countdown. What's on your mind, Mr. Merlin?
Two more things. I just updated that, sorry, I didn't see it.
Shit or get off the pot.
I just updated my iPhone to the 5.1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the camera button on the front, when you turn it on, okay? You see how that little new camera thing? Have you guys updated your phones yet?
Not yet.
It came out today. Joel, did you update
today?
It? Today? Yeah.
Today. Don't think I updated it today.
5.1. Okay, so you remember when you double tap the home button and you get the camera option to select the camera, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, now when you touch the home button to turn it on, the slide to unlock has actually shrunk, and the camera picture is right beside it. When you put your finger on the camera, you slide up, and then there's the camera.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Oh, it's awesome. Oh, so simple and so easy. I love it. It just made my night. I can't wait to find out what else is new. And the second thing, which is actually, we always talk about what we're watching, what we're reading. Everything's indoors. We're always doing stuff indoors. I went out and got some fresh air on the weekend, and it was so nice. There's a, I think there's probably 5 ski hills within 45 minutes of my house,
nice.
I still have lots of snow in this area. I know you guys are all going into summer temperatures right now.
Not really, but yeah.
Well, yeah. I thought I saw 12 for you guys on Thursday or something.
It's coming up tomorrow. It's supposed to be warm tomorrow.
Yeah. So my wife and I on Sunday went snow tubing.
Oh, that's fine.
Yes, but at the ski hill, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're talking like they're car truck tire tubes wrapped in this
canvas, slick canvas
with
yeah.
this the slippery bottom and then the strap. So like you walk up to the old like T bars that you used to have in for ski hills for like kids yeah. and stuff that just drag you up. But this one is you sit down on your tube. And the strap with the big rubber ring on the end, and the attendant just puts it on this little hook, and it drags you up the hill, yeah. right? And then you get to the top, and then it falls off, and you know it's so easy. And then you mm-hmm. go up. Well, my wife and I, we went to the biggest part. There's four runs, and we went to the biggest run, and we hooked in together, and we went down together, hooked like holding onto each other's tube. Like
which you're not allowed, not really supposed to do.
Yes, you're allowed. No, these guys are right up to okay. five people. They'll put five people together, but they won't go more than five. Right? So, I mean, you one person is fast enough, but you're flying with any yeah. more people's weight. So the two of us are going down facing each other. And I wish I had a camera, but it's so cold because, I mean, it was what? Minus 15 on Sunday plus wind chill going like 80 kilometers an hour.
Jeez.
Right, so it was like minus 40 on the face. Right, I had my ski goggles on. But we're flying down, and I'm staring at her, and she's staring at me, and she's laughing at me because her face is like she's like got the O face going on, like oh. they put two bumps in it, like kind of like a little bit of an incline, and then back down again, kind of okay. slow you so you all don't right. go too out of control. The second one, we're still going so fast. I think we got 3 feet of air together, like nice. Up in the air and back down again. Oh, and then to see your face at that point, whoa!
Yeah, enough hang time to see the oh.
Yeah. I went to the same place about 5 years ago, and they and we used to go right out into this farmer's field, and you went out a good 200 meters out into this guy's field at the bottom of the hill, right? So this time they put a big slope at the bottom, so you go up the top of that, and then there's no more. You don't go past that. So, but it was a fun time, and just extreme adrenaline rush, you know. No yeah. worries. Nothing's going to happen, right? You're not going to go off the track.
Stuff does happen. I used to actually work at a ski hill back in Newfoundland as their pro ski patroller and snowboard instructor.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had one of those hills there. And we've had some pretty nasty accidents there. It was pretty there's two that come to mind immediately. One was we told these people, like, you shouldn't be holding on to the other people's tubes because it's dangerous, because this was pretty steep hill going down to a lake. And we had a little bit of an incline to stop them, but when it got cold and it got slick, you go so fast, you just shoot right off the incline into the woods. Again, you know, rural Newfoundland, man, you know, it's a little harder.
Walk anyway, it off.
so we used to put, we had bales of hay. So we used to put hay out on the base of the hill there, and that would slow you down. But anyway, and so one lady one day, she was going down, holding on to one of her friends, and she hooked in somehow and ended up landing on her head, and he had to take her off the hill on a spine board and all that stuff. And yeah, that was a bad scene all the way around, but it was another day. And it was early in the season, and there was this young girl, probably about grade 8, you know, school's in, all the kids are running all over the place, and this kid, she's flying down the hill, and we told her, like, just relax, you'll stop when you hit the hay, sort of thing, and she's going feet first down the hill, and she decided to put her feet down to stop. Well, she just basically catapulted herself face first into the snow, doing about 60.
Oh,
bounces and all that stuff. We're like, oh, God. So we get her up to the shack. And
did you have cherry slushy there? Cone?
There was some marks on the snow. And we got there, and I did my assessment of her. So I'm, like, talking to her, and her speech is completely slurred. And she's cross-eyed, and she's not making any sense at all. I'm like, oh, man, this girl is messed up. I need to call an ambulance.
Wait, Peyton?
Hmm?
Rural Newfoundland.
Yes, rural Newfoundland. So her teacher comes over, and she's like, no, that's how she is. I'm like, oh, good enough. So we just sent her back.
I thought you joked, but that's hilarious.
No, that's, you know, I'm like, okay, I think they still got her checked out and stuff, right? But that's pretty much how she was.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's too funny.
It's fun time. Yeah.
Well, speaking of hard times, we are about to embark on the hard times coming in the Winter is Coming countdown with Game of Thrones Season 1, Episode 7, You Win or You Die. This episode furthers the storyline of deterioration of the political balance of the Seven Kingdoms, with Eddard Stark revealing what he has discovered to Cersei Lannister while King Robert is still away on a hunt. The title of the episode is part of a quote from Cersei Lannister during the final confrontation with Eddard. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground. The catchphrase has been frequently used during the promotion of both the books and the TV series. The episode itself attracted 2.4 million viewers in its initial airing, with a total of 3.2 million including the follow-up airing. The episode was generally well-received by critics or is well-acted for its well-acted dramatic tension, but with several criticizing the coupling of exposition and nudity as sexposition. And just to springboard on that one point, I agree. I didn't catch that the first viewing, but the scene in the brothel with Littlefinger talking and having, you know, these two girls, these two whores kind of going at it the whole time that he's just kind of monologuing plot, it really kind of smacked of Spartacus season two or the prequel season, whatever it was, where it was just, you know, little teeny bits of story tying, you know, basically orgies together. So I did kind of feel like that smacked me over the head with, you know, hey, our demographic is, you know, 25-year-old male, bam, you know. Or, you
well, know, I guess it really, you know? it beats the heck out of the scrolling screen from Star Wars.
From episode one.
Well, I will.
Long time ago.
Not so long. Not so long.
Giggity, oh, man. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Well, I was really late watching this episode. I actually just finished it before the show started. And so I don't steal anybody's thunder, I want to let you guys go first on your thoughts on the episode. And I'll chime in as I see fit. So, Chad, what were your thoughts?
Just what you had written first, actually, was my first thing. That first scene with Tywin Lannister, we meet him for the first time. And you know right away that this guy is tough. Not to be messed with. He's skinning an animal, which looked to me like the sigil for House Baratheon.
Yes.
You know, honestly, I mean, I haven't seen an animal. Yes. Yeah. You know, I haven't seen an animal skinned in a long time, personally. I was like 10 years old, which didn't scar me, actually. But I think I really think he was skinning that in real life.
If he wasn't, it was done, and he was running the knife, doing the motions, and they were adding.
But that was real.
But it was. I'm pretty sure, pretty confident that was real. Otherwise, it was, you know, good job on the props department. Otherwise,
They blew the whole budget. But when he says to Jamie, like, we know who Tywin Lannister is, especially when he says a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of sheep.
Yeah,
we're better than everybody. We rule them. Enough said.
Yeah, that scene itself was a window into both Tywin and Jaime Lannister.
Yeah.
In terms of their characters and their motivations and stuff like that. And one of the things that struck me this time around was that you know that Tywin and the family are kind of the, like, you understand them as the bad guys. Like, they're, you know, that they're the people that are trying to throw everybody around. But the sense that Tywin is old enough to know that family is what matters.
Yeah. And not, the name, not even the family, but the name. The
name, like, not honor, not, you know, your castle or your riches, but family, and that's what's going to last. I mean, it still kind of has that. Well, I mean, Chad, you had mentioned that Cersei was the Hitler of Game of Thrones, and we just met Hitler's dad. You know,
yeah. That's awesome. That's crazy. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, he puts things in perspective for Jaime. You know, like, listen, this is where it is, and this is what your name is. The only thing that's going to last. You were the bodyguard for two kings. One of was crazy. The other was a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, good job, bravo. Yeah.
And the bit where he's like, you know, I didn't know you cared so much for the imp, and he's like, you know, he might be the lowest of the low, but he is still a Lannister, you know. So if people are hanging on to him, we need to get him back, because otherwise everybody thinks they can move against us with impunity, right? So.
Yeah, and he's very much talking about, you know, the family as a whole at that moment, saying, like, you know, just, you know, we have to have everybody, you know, just, so is that kind of hypocritical? Like, you know, he's saying, like, it doesn't matter what other people think of you. It doesn't matter, you know, what the sheep think. It matters what we do. But then he's saying we can't have Tyrion captured and imprisoned, because then people will think they can move against us. Well, isn't that caring about what people think? Or is that more of a positioning thing?
I think what he said is the lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of the sheep. Yeah. Like, not to say they didn't really care. Like, you know, just, I'm gonna do this anyway. But if the sheep are thinking this, then
yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Patent, yeah.
It's a patent line. It's a classic patent line when he says, you know, I don't care what the other guy does. I'm gonna make him worry about what I do.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm still gonna pay attention to what he does, but I'm not really gonna care. Yeah.
He's not
gonna dictate me. I'm gonna dictate him.
Yeah.
It's his terms, you know. So like this is how it's gonna be. To get back to what you said about the sex position and stuff. That scene. It was a little disturbing to watch some of that. Like, wow, shouldn't I be like watching this on like a triple X rated site or something like that? But at the same time, they get it out of him that his love for another person, right? And it sets it up for the betrayal at the end of the scene, at the end of the episode, where I told you not to trust me. And they're like, shouldn't he trust? Oh shit.
Yeah.
Who is this guy to him? You know, so they really set it up with that.
And I think the hard part there is that he can't and wouldn't confess that to anybody but a pair of whores that wouldn't care.
Yeah.
Right. Because you could have just for a second there in my head, I thought, well, you could have just had him walking down the hall and telling somebody. Then I was like, well, no, he wouldn't tell anybody of any importance, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Right.
He certainly wouldn't tell the spider. So.
No. Jeez. Renly? No, not Renly. What's his name?
Varys.
Varys. Yeah.
Bars.
Bars. Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard. Like the guy on that plays Varys on Game of Thrones does a good job, but it's very similar to the way that Roy Dotrice reads it in the book. But in the book, it's just, it's almost like the guy's talking with his mouth full all the time. it just makes your skin crawl. he's just that creeper, like he's the close talker. He's the guy that gets in your bubble and speaks really slowly all the time.
He's hugging you.
Yeah. No, thanks.
Yeah. And just one other point from my perspective on this episode, my wife was not happy when Cersei ripped up the king's final words that he said to Ned. So, in front of everybody, and she's like, what? She can't do that. Like, everybody saw that. And I'm like, she cares.
Yeah, but she did it, right? And it was done. So I was like, okay.
And nobody stopped her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody stopped her.
Yeah. Well, that's because, it's like what Littlefinger said, I believe it was last episode, in terms of, it takes gold to be a king, and essentially the Lannisters are buying their way, into the throne. I mean, with a few murders along the way, but they're essentially buying the strength that they need and all the places that they need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and Peyton, what about you, sir?
Well, I just had a few notes there as well. Jorah, how do you pronounce his name?
Jorah.
You see him when he's over at the market there, and he gets the little kid comes up and gives him the pardon from the spider. And I guess that will be because earlier he sent news that Khaleesi was pregnant and all that stuff. And then
earlier he said, I need to find something. And he took off and he
took off and comes back, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, so then he steps up to sort of help protect her. Which is kind of odd. You can see when he's holding the pardon in his hand, like he's a little conflicted, right? Especially after standing up to her brother in a previous episode. So then, with the wine and all that stuff, I thought it was pretty neat scene because, he just sort of stepped up and, made sure that she was okay. And then later on when the wine merchant is strapped to the pole, I thought it was pretty neat the way that entire scene was acted. The Drogo comes in and you can tell he's like very angry, and you also get a sense of his mass inside. You see him against her and that she's a small woman, but you really you don't get a sense how big he actually is until he's like right up against the guy against the pole, and he's like a cat just looking at his prey for a moment. It's like, why am I going? And then the guy just starts trembling, right?
He pissed himself for something.
Man, this is so bad. And then then pledging the Iron Chair and the Seven Kingdoms and all that stuff, and it's it's right up there with Wyatt Earp from Tombstone. You tell him coming, I'm bringing hell with me, sort of thing. It's like, it's all on now, right? It's pretty sweet.
The thing that I noticed about that exchange is that it immediately conflicts with the quieter scene between Drogo and Daenerys earlier in the episode where they're speaking in Dothraki. Yeah. And he's like, throne? Why does my son need a throne? He doesn't need a chair. He just needs a horse. Yeah. That's what kings sit on. Horses, not thrones. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's saying it with as much love as he can, but he's just like, bah, whatever. Silly guy.
I don't understand.
He's trying to understand. He's like, doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I thought it was a very telling moment for the Dothraki people and what they value, you know, what their culture is and how much it really differs from the West. And, you know, then to see that contrasted by a failed assassination attempt on Daenerys, which is what basically enrages him to the point of taking his army across the sea, which he wasn't going to do.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, meh, whatever, not happening. You know, and but now he's like, well, screw it. Not only am I going to go over there, but I'm going to conquer everything. I'm not going to leave the last one of them alive because they tried to kill my love. I mean, it was a great, you know... Mm-hmm. It's that great springboard, you know, that vengeance and that, you know, it, because I was struggling to remember watching the episodes, like, well, okay, he doesn't want to go. What changes his mind? And I couldn't remember. And then now I do.
Yeah, and seeing the assassin tied to her horse, you know, that I think it was also kind of telling how much, you know, once again, how committed she is to her new people. You know, because that may not have been something she would have done in her previous life. And now it's like, no, this is the way it goes. So
was that
this
episode?
Yeah. Just at the very end when they're rolling out of the city. And then the guy's strapped to the horse.
Oh, yes.
And he's walking behind her. You know, that's, you know, and she pays no mind to it at all. It's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You know, and the guy says, you know, I once seen a man walk 9 miles, right? It's pretty rough, man. It's pretty rough. And the other thing I thought was pretty neat was when... back at the Night's Watch, when John and they all take their vows to become part of the Night's Watch, and you know, you see John's uncle's horse come running back without the uncle, and you know, that just sort of says to himself, you know, well, I really need to get out there and I need to find my uncle and that. And then when they're making their appointments and he gets a stewardship versus a ranger, and he's about to lose his mind. I like how Sam steps up and sort of puts it in perspective for him.
Yes.
And also that little moment when he does find out he's going to be a steward on Ranger, you know, the arse of a captain looking at him and smiling like he's got the better of him. But I got a feeling, I haven't gone any further ahead, I got a feeling that down the road, you know, things might change. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that far ahead either. And I mean, that's one of the things I like so much about John's story. I mean, it helps his character develop. It gives you that sense that he is meant to be a lot more than you think.
Yeah, he's not just a bastard son.
No,
yeah.
Exactly. And you know, like you said, with Sam putting it in perspective, I really feel like, you know, he is going to be the first in line to replace the bastard captain. I think it's Alistair is the...
Alistair Thorne. Alistair Thorne.
Oh, it's Thorne is his last name.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's so hard on the wall because they all call each other by their first names, whereas in Westeros or farther south, everybody goes by their last names.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of a formal, you know, when they're talking about one or the other, they're always talking about last names.
I guess that also might go to, you know, them being their own family now, and it's, you know, it's more brotherly bonds, which is why you probably go by your first name, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like that that foreshadowing it gives John's story. Because I don't really like Thorne. I don't know if I liked him in the book either. I mean, I understand that he's very real. I mean, he's not he's not there to babysit anybody.
Yeah.
But I'm not someone that I really, you know, enjoyed in the book.
Yeah. And the dog bringing out the ham was kind of telling you know what's coming up on that too, right?
Yeah.
I just love those dogs. I hope they have a bigger role in the books to come. I guess we'll see. But
my issue is the TV show. Is that if they can't, what are they going to do? Like a Lord of the Rings camera trick, kind of like this dog is huge now. Cause these things, they even showed it in the first episode when they found the pups. The mother is the size of, well, like a pony.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're still trying to pass off dogs late in the season. I mean, I'm getting a little.
I don't have it in our picks this week, and I was thinking about it, but it was something that I did tweet out, and I'm pretty sure it was either with my account or the Citadel Cafe account, but there is a leaked photo, a screen grab of what Grey Wind looks like for season 2, and he is a lot bigger.
He's Which not, one's Grey Wind?
Rob Stark.
Rob's Grey Wind?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Isn't that Grey Wind?
Yeah.
Sansa was Lady, and that's okay. She's dead. Yeah. Arya was Nymeria.
She
ran away, or was forced to run away.
Shaggy Dog is a little fella there.
The youngest, yeah.
Bran?
No, not Bran. The youngest one. I remember his name right now. Rickon. Rickon is Shaggy. What's Bran's wolf's name?
Summer,
right. Okay, yeah. So Grey Wind is
okay, it is Grey Wind.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Is Rob's wolf. And yeah, it's hip high.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, I'm assuming CG from the look of it, but it looked good. You know, like, yeah, I think they're going to get bigger. I'm looking forward to them getting bigger because there's some battles that I want to see them in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and my last point that I had in my notes here was King Robert's when he bids good day, and the idea of I want everyone to taste the boar that got me. I really admire that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it is a little twisted and stuff, but it's kind of, you know, like, I got in the end, so, you know, dig in, folks, right? And it's kind of fun, and the entire bit again with the paper tearing up, you know, at the end. Him writing, him dictating to Ned, I tell my son Jeffrey comes of age, and Ned writing his rightful heir as opposed to Jeffrey.
Yeah.
You know, that way, you know, Robert never knows, and, you know, she just tears up the paper. So it's a moot point anyway, right? It doesn't really matter at all, I guess. At least at this point, it doesn't matter because the paper's tore up, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this episode. I like how it does take a little bit to get going. I mean, Chad, you've mentioned before that the first few episodes kind of get you, you know, a little bit of a lull, but I like how it really starts to pick up right after episode 5.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, last week I was listening to the show and there was a couple points you guys are missing names, like you'd missed some names like we just did there. But I'm sitting there and it was, for whatever reason, it was fresh in my mind and I'm talking to my computer. It's this.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure there's lots of fans out there that are correcting us. I mean, I know one of the problems that I have is that I watch them on my computer, so I can't type on the computer. I have to type on my phone when I'm coming up with little notes for the show. Okay. And the iPhone autocorrect on all of these names is brutal. So I know what name I mean, but it is spelt like 8 different ways in the one episode show notes. I mean, I'm sure Jocelyn, when she goes over the notes, must have an absolute field day with all the misspellings, and hopefully she knows that it's not, you know, stupidity, but it's just iPhone autocorrect and I have no desire to try and correct it. So yeah. So okay, that I think that's good for me for this episode. Any final thoughts from you guys?
Hurry up and get to the end.
poor Ned.
Yes.
Poor Ned.
Poor Ned.
Can't win, man. Can't win.
Yeah. Nice guys finish last.
Yeah.
No. You whine like a mule. You are still alive.
Yes.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I caught this week besides Game of Thrones was the new Avengers trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And it is breaking records, or has broken records, left, right, center. And it is really freaking cool. I'm excited. I was not sure how this was going to come together. I'm still not entirely sure about Scarlett Johansson's character, but...
Yeah, especially in that circle shot when they're panning around and they're all setting the... And she hauls it, this little 9mm, and she's like, oh, they're going to get it now.
Yeah.
Right? And meanwhile, you see the guys with the big... And nothing's happening, right?
Yeah.
Captain America's got his, Captain America's going, wow, looks like I'm protecting her too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that, you know?
Yeah. Or she can spin and crouch down. Let's see what happens.
Duck now.
Meanwhile, you got, you know, I think the Hulk is just awesome. So
yeah. And Mark Ruffalo, they did the same thing that they do with the other Hulk movies, is that they do kind of make the Hulk look a little bit like the actor that's playing Banner. And I've never been a real big fan of Ruffalo, but as the Hulk, he looks more Hulk-like.
Like he does. Yeah.
The other movies, I always thought that the Hulk was a little bit too pretty. Do you know, like, his head wasn't really square, and it was all very kind of, you know, I don't know, kind of pretty boy football player-esque. Yeah. But now I think he looks a little bit better. I like how, I don't know if they've ever, even in the Incredible Hulk with was it Norton?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they made the Hulk that big. Like, they've always made him muscular, well, but I feel like this one he has like a really thick waist too. Like, he's not skinny.
Yeah, I think that the he's a little more like the original sort of Gray Hulk way back in the day.
Right.
And they in the first one, the Ang Lee one that they had out, he was a little more like the Dave Quignon or Quignon.
Yep.
Yeah, he also did the pit and stuff. You can see he's much more Ang Lee style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the ones back with Ang Lee, they had him at like a 9-foot version, a 12, and a 15-foot version, depending on what was happening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he sort of just got bigger as he got stronger and more angry. So anyway, this will be interesting. I like how when she says, she'll basically make him an offer to make him go with her. And you see all the guys outside with the guns and stuff. Yeah. And it's totally like... his work was based, loosely. I'm not quite sure how in the movie how close they're sticking with it, but Banner's work was all based off the super soldier serum. So all they got to say to him is, "Listen, we got Steve Rogers. He's alive. Come on back and see him, right?" And you sort of get a glimpse of that when you see the two of the guys, Steve Rogers and Banner, on the rooftop, and he sort of got Banner got a look on his face like, "Oh my God, here you are," right?
So, yeah, and the thing with Steve Rogers is that, I like the character and I like the actor playing him, but the new suit they got him in.
Oh my God, yeah.
It looks ridiculous. It's really not cool.
Yeah, well, I think it's just under the neck part that's killing it, right?
Yeah, it really is. Not to mention that he did look so cool in the Captain America movie where they set it in the 40s.
Yeah.
And he had like the leather kind of army man version. It was practical. Helmet.
Yeah.
And a helmet. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think they've gone kind of the wrong way. It's like, wait a minute. Because he's a super soldier, but he's not indestructible. So, he should have body armor and, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But for me, I've noticed this with all the reboots and all the different, the sequels and the prequels and stuff. It doesn't matter. Like Batman, the suit changed every time. At least they described it in The Dark Knight why he wanted to change. That to me was like not smacking me in the face, Like if it ain't broke, don't fix it,
Yeah.
So like Iron Man, you got the new suit. Okay. So you could maybe write off like, yeah, he's doing that. But if it's just a costume, I guess it is the future now. His old costume would have been destroyed in the crash.
Yeah. And this is probably like some sort of like Kevlar base.
Maybe, but still, yeah.
And the other thing you have to remember too, is that, is it Steve Richards is his last name? No, Steve
Rogers.
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 Richards is the Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah. Richards. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Steve,
double R.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Steve Rogers, He's kind of got, he's that poster boy American, yeah. Like, so you could see him kind of wanting a red, white, and blue suit,
Yeah.
Yeah. I can sort of see the justification of it, but
whatever. Sort of like the Punisher with the big skull on his chest, it gives someone something to shoot at. It's the target. As opposed to like the headshot, you're going to shoot at the big white thing in the middle of his chest. Same with the star on Captain's chest, right?
Right. Yeah.
And from the point of view of a Canadian, to see the Captain America, I don't associate with Captain America. I know, and as a kid, I wasn't into the mainstream comics at all. So
yeah.
Like that. So I never really. But so like for me to see that, it looks a little ridiculous. It looks a little wow. You look like a flag.
Yeah.
So
well, so does Superman for that matter.
Oh yeah.
It's iconic, same sort of
exactly
thing.
Iconic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the Iron Man stuff. I mean, some of the trailer footage was really cool. I mean, I'm on board, and I mean, other podcasts have taken the words right out of my mouth. I was excited, but I really got excited when Iron Man was hit.
Yeah,
is falling, and then the Hulk grabs him and keeps him from being saved, but then destroys an entire building in the process.
Yeah,
there's some really cool moments, and I'm curious to see how Thor's going to play into it all too.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how much they take out of the Ultimates comic, because I think a lot of this is based around that, especially in the Ultimate Universe of Marvel. Like Nick Fury is totally based on Samuel Jackson. You can see it's him. So there was no one else you can cast for the role in the films anyway, because the way they have it done in the comic.
Right.
But
but
in the actual, and if anyone has a chance to read these stuff, you should really read them because they're really, really good. At one point, the government is going to shut down the Avengers Initiative essentially because there's no one left to fight. There's an event they take care of the event, and then after that, there's nothing happening, and then, you know, the politician's like, well, do we really need to spend the money on this and all this stuff? So Banner tries to try to give them something to fight, right? You know, and he ends up, like, turning into the Hulk, and in the process, he levels an entire building and kills, like, 800 people, plus on his way out of the building, he eats the entire nursing staff. So, because in the Ultimates, essentially, like, they take the idea of Banner being sort of a pacifist. Hulk's essentially a cannibal. Like, he will just, he's just pure, you know, instinct and rage. It's pretty hardcore. So
wow.
And it'll be interesting to see how much of this sort of things they can inject into it. And also, like, Loki really messes with Thor in some of the Ultimates universe. And at one point, Thor is in a mental institution and all this stuff because, you know, he turns the world against him and makes people think that he's just some lunatic. Anyway, so. Right, you know, yeah, if you get a chance, you even check your local libraries. They might have copies of it there. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, or if you happen to have a brand new iPad, download the comic and watch it or read it on a Retina display.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, yeah, again, I don't know if we touched this a couple weeks ago, but you guys hear about the entire debacle with the digital downloads of Marvel comics that was going on a couple weeks ago?
I think you told me off air one time, but fill us in.
Yeah, essentially, all these bootleg comics kept coming up, and they were showing up the day of. So a new comic come out in print on Wednesday, and like sometimes even before the comic came out, the digital version of it was out, and sometimes it was missing the UPC code or whatever it is, as well as, like, you know, certain text wasn't there or whatnot. And they finally tracked it down that it was somebody who had the actual digital file, because there was no pixelation. They were perfect. They were pristine. And they were actually, like, someone within the organization was releasing them at bootleg copies out there, right? Anyway, so if you're finding them, and they were, like, perfect, that's why. Because they end up filling the hole in, and it's not happening again, I guess. At least not in that form, but anyway.
Oh, man. So so what have you been watching, Peyton?
Me? I saw the John Carter 10-minute preview thing.
I had that listed here, and I didn't get to watch it. So fill me in. Was it good?
I actually enjoyed it. After, you know, people some articles online putting the entire John Carter thing in perspective, saying essentially, you know, how this is the source material for much of the current fantasy and sci-fi you see. If you look at it from that point of view, you know, I think it's going to be a fun movie.
Yeah.
And you know, like in the trailers, you see they're in the big arena, and it looks like, you know, from
episode two,
you know, just put that out of your mind, because episode two, you know, took from that. So anyway, this all takes place on Earth in the very beginning, and Burroughs' character actually has to come in and take care of Carter's affairs, and he gets his diary from Carter. And he's reading it through, and the text, the sort of dialogue, sort of indicates, you know, the relationship they have, and you know, why he's the only person allowed to read this diary. And then they go back into it, and it's like, you know, sometime I think during the Civil War, if not towards the end of it, and it's in a wild, wild west sort of thing, and Carter is just trying to, you know, make his way in a gold mine sort of thing, and he is essentially, you know, the best at what he does. You know, cavalryman, that, and they want to re-enlist him, and he wants nothing to do with it, and he's trying to escape and whatnot. Anyway, it takes it up to the moment where I guess there's going to be a big reveal, and it just takes off just shy of that, so it's just this little hook. But it's nice that they actually took the time to, because I guess they are having a problem with people saying this all looks derivative of Avatar and everything else, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, like they're putting a lot of effort into the marketing of this film, but they're probably not getting the results, like, or the feedback they want. So the fact they're putting out a 10-minute trailer or scene from the film is the exact opposite of a film that goes out and doesn't actually release any trailer at all. You know, like, they're saying, it's going to be a good film. Here's a little taste. Come on out and see it, you know?
I actually had a really interesting conversation with Laura on the weekend before we recorded the Dating Digital podcast. She was talking about movie trailers and what good ones are versus bad ones. And she was speaking with her friend Gordon about the Oscars and different, you know, why movies were winning and why some movies that win aren't necessarily a blockbuster, you know, sales in the theaters. And it was really interesting how when your demographic, you know, is kind of the young action movie goer male, To sell to that demographic, you have to give them point blank what they want in the trailer. It has to be basically cool shot after cool shot after cool shot, because they want to know what they're buying. You know, they don't necessarily want to just go on reviews or go on, you know, a little bit more of an artsy trailer. They
spoon feed them.
Exactly. Yeah. You really have to do it in order to get people to go see it. And the other thing that they're worried about, too, is that it's just called John Carter. There's no John Carter of Mars, which was the title of the original series in graphic novel form or comic book form.
No, novel form. Originally.
Oh, novel form. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's you know, because they've taken that of Mars away, they're trying to attract, you know, of course, a broader audience, because you've got, I can't remember the guy's name, Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights, Taylor Kitsch is the actor's name, and he, you know, he's a good-looking guy. There's a lot of female fans out there that would probably want to go see this movie and probably wouldn't want to go if they knew it was a sci-fi flick.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of an easier way to try to attract a broader audience. Or, I mean, I suppose I shouldn't say, you know, just women, but, you know, men that wouldn't be interested in sci-fi either, because there's those guys out there, too.
I got the feeling watching just the previews. I haven't watched this 10-minute preview, but the regular John Carter previews, right away, I was like, what is this? And you know what? I felt that stigma when I saw Disney attached to it. I went, jeez. You know, like, what are you giving to me? But now I liked Prince of Persia. I liked the layout, the format. The story was, you know, I didn't play the video game or anything, but it was fun. It was visually appealing, you know. And so if John Carter follows that same formula, then, you know, it'll get me and I'll watch it.
Well, I can. So. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Peyton.
The director is Stanton, from the guy who did Monsters, Inc. and all that stuff from Pixar. So
comment.
It's story driven, right? Sorry.
You're absolutely right. Story. Yeah, so. He happens to be my favorite director from Pixar. Yeah. I mean, he co-directed Bug's Life. He directed Finding Nemo and WALL-E. And it's a little different. He's a little bit of a different director, and I like that about him. You know, and because he doesn't necessarily go into a lot of tropes. You know, like I remember I just watched a TED Talk. It's a 19-minute TED Talk that he gives about story and why he is a storyteller. And it is a fantastic TED Talk, and I will look up the link and throw it in the show notes here. So anybody out there that wants to watch it can check it out. Worth the 19 minutes and 30 seconds of your life, because it was really funny. He was talking about one of the more poignant moments in the talks. He's talking about when they were first getting Toy Story off the ground, and they were having trouble selling the story to Disney because Disney didn't want to sign off on it. They weren't ready for the change. They weren't ready for the different, you know, kind of method that they were taking. So they faxed the story off to one of their lead consultants and lyricists and stuff. And the guy came back with a fax that said, you know, you need a song, you need an I Want song, you need a villain, and you need... you know, all these, basically anything that you see in, you know, insert Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Lion King, all these different things, right? And it was an exact contradiction to the mission statement at Pixar, which was no songs, no I Want song, you know, no villain type, you know, like really tropey villain type characters and stuff like that. So it was really cool, because it then made Pixar rebel even more once they get a hold of that fax. They were like, well, screw this noise. We're not doing that ever again. And they ended up pushing it and being successful with it. So I didn't realize, I mean, I was excited to see John Carter, but I did not realize that Andrew Stanton was directing until just the other day.
Mm. Oh, good.
So yeah, I'm stoked about it. I think it's going to be good. Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi, one of the other things that I got into was finally completing the viewing of Star Wars on Blu-ray. Watched all six now. So I watched The Return of the Jedi on Blu-ray. And I was going to watch it with my friend Maria, because she hadn't seen them all. I'll just watch it again with her sometime. But I couldn't wait. There's been all this Star Wars in the news, and I really wanted to see it. So I just sat down and watched it. And it looked great, like 99% of the time. There were some shots of C-3PO, and some of the shits were the ships. The shits. Yeah. C-3PO with the shits. Show title right there.
Yeah. That down. Nuts and bolts everywhere.
As long as there's no spare wires hanging out too, that'll be horrible.
Gross. It's like when a cat eats tinsel.
Oh, dude. And that's why I don't own a cat.
Exactly. Anyway, so some of the technical shots in the movie, C-3PO, the ships, any of the Death Star shots, that kind of stuff. All of the matte paintings were really, really nice. Everything looked fantastic. Some of the older footage that you knew was obviously on film and was damaged or they were trying to restore, it really didn't look so hot. Some of the close-ups of Mark Hamill, who doesn't look so hot anyway, but you know, like there were some issues with some of the film grain and stuff like that. It wasn't as, you know, crisp as a brand new kind of DVD or Blu-ray experience, I guess. And I did have some serious issues with the sound. Like, Chad, did you watch all of them on Blu-ray yet?
Yeah, I did, months ago now. I mean, I think I reviewed them in like episode 2 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Did you notice anything about the sound?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. I noticed one of the things. Now, I've got a little side note on my surround sound system as of just last week. But I noticed that the volume, the actual sound level changed from show to the episode to episode. Huh. So like I would have to say if I leave it on level 18 on my system, I would have to turn it up to level 21 for like Empire and then down again or something like that. Those were the issues I noticed. You wrote something about the sound between different things.
It was the sound of different ships. Like it was basically the surround sound of ships flying overhead and mostly the last battle with the Falcon and the TIE fighters. And I think it was the Falcon, but whenever it would fly by, it wouldn't even be a sound. It would be just like loud static. And it wasn't pleasant. Yeah. No, it didn't.
No, I didn't get that
at all.
I didn't get that. I would have noticed. That would have drove me crazy.
Well, I mean, you could tell it was still trying to be the sound of the movie, but it was like someone took the Falcon and just like overdrove it. Like it just didn't sound right, you know. Okay. And it sounded great in the other movie. So I don't know whether it was just because it was so close to the camera. Maybe there wasn't as many flybys of the Falcon in other movies that I wasn't paying attention to. But yeah, it kind of drove me a little bit
crazy. I can think of the scene that you're probably thinking about too, right when he's going into the Death Star.
It's when they fly inside.
Yeah, it's so close and tight that the Falcon's going over the camera at one point and you know what I mean? So like it flies right over, so it comes from the back.
Yeah.
And you know, that could say something about I'm not gonna knock your system, but the quality of speakers, you know, like some people if they've got a crappier surround sound system, like you could just, you know, push the envelope on those speakers and just go, the speakers could just go, I quit.
Yeah. Well,
here's what you're getting.
And I don't have anything too fancy. I mean, they're JBL speakers, but they're bookshelf speakers. I mean, they're the size of my iPhone. Like there's nothing crazy about them.
Did you have it cranked?
No, I can't crank it. I'm in an apartment building. I can't crank it.
Exactly. That's what I figured.
They are next to me though. Like they're right behind the couch as opposed to like the back of the room. So I can't really do that. But I mean, and that was the only real grievance I had with the technical stuff. I mean, I actually didn't mind a lot of the changes. Like I thought, okay, this is the one that every nerd out there is griping about and all the different changes that happen with Vader and the Ewoks. I mean, spoiler alert, if you don't know this, then I mean, what rock have you been living under if you've been on the internet at all? There's a moment when Palpatine throws Luke into is zapping Luke, and then Vader throws Palpatine into the power shaft, and he's like,
"No, throws him." Just kidding.
Yeah. He says no.
Palpatine's bad.
Yeah. So the way that it was, everybody was overreacting online was that it was like that giant Frankenstein no from episode 3, and it's not at all. He just kind of says, no, no, and then grabs him and throws him. And it's just, it didn't need to be there, but it doesn't hurt the scene.
It doesn't hurt anything.
No, it doesn't hurt it at all. I mean, the first time he says no softly, it doesn't sound like James Earl Jones. Like it didn't sound right. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was fine. I didn't really have any issues with it. There was one other scene that I noticed where there was a Doug walking around in Jabba's palace, and that looked really out of place. It was very, like the shadows weren't right or something just made it pop to me. And that was an example of like, why did you even do that? Why did you even put that there? Because you just didn't need to. And the other big change was the Ewoks blinking. And I noticed it right away because as I've grown up, Empire is my favorite, but when I was a kid, Return of the Jedi was my favorite movie. This was the one that I would watch more often than the others. And I liked the Battle of Endor. I thought it was kind of cool. I had the toys too. That might've played a part of it. I actually had like an Ewok tree fort toy thing.
Yeah. Which a side note on that, was it Mattel that made all the Star Wars toys?
Hasbro?
Okay, they made that same tree fort over and over and over and over again. It was The Hook. Remember that movie with Robin Williams?
Yes.
That was that toy. It was,
you're right.
It was, what, it was three or four different play sets over the years. And I'd be interested to see where I'll have to look that up. But I remember it as, it was Endor. It was Hook. It was one other thing for sure as well. And they changed the colors. The net was there for most of them too. The same net.
Yeah, the same net that the characters get caught up in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They reused that like three or four different brands of toys and other movies and stuff like that. And I was blown away when I saw that as a kid. I saw it, actually recognized it right away. I was like, what? You can't do that. Yeah. But yeah, so but Tori Joel, just before you keep going. My surround sound set, when I moved into my girlfriend's place, future wife, I never changed my settings. And there's a little syncing microphone that finds the optimal levels for all your speakers that comes with the actual surround sound system. Never did it here. It sounds a lot better now that I've done it. It was optimized for my old place, it's a completely different setup.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I ran the THX thing, and I mean, I've done all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I have to remember is that the disc itself says 6.1 or 7.1 for the surround sound,
okay.
And I only have 5.1.
Yeah, me too.
So, I mean, maybe it's just my system trying to compute something over the two left and right rear speakers that should be coming out of a rear center channel if I had one. But my amp doesn't even do 6.1. I mean, my amp is 10 years old or more. So,
yeah.
I mean, it does the job. I'm okay with it. I mean, Peyton, you thought the sound was okay on Avatar.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, that worked it okay. Yeah. The Ewok blinking thing is something that I noticed, of course, because I've seen it all the time. Like, I've watched the movie so many times, but I didn't mind it. And if anything, I mean, it's better than like the slow mechanical blink of a puppet. You know, which is probably why they didn't have eyelids in the first place, is because back then they just couldn't have the tech not look like a stupid children's toy.
Yeah.
But they did well. Wow, Joel, speak well.
Good talk.
Me talk good. They did well not overusing it. There are maybe like four blinks in the whole movie. It only happens a few times, and it only happens when the character is startled or it's poignant or whatever. And I think it actually adds to the illusion of the Ewoks being not midgets in suits, right? So, but it does bring me to one last point about Star Wars, which is something I heard on online the other day, which is the Machete Order, which is a suggested new order of viewing the Star Wars saga. The first thing, and the reason why you call it the Machete Order, is because you drop off episode one. Jar Jar Binks, Anakin as a child, the pod racing, unfortunately, do not exist. So you lose Darth Maul and you lose the pod racing, which are the only two really kind of worthy points of that movie.
Yeah.
However, they suggest you watch Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and then before you finish the original trilogy. So you're left off with the cliffhanger that Darth Vader is Luke's father. Then you go back and you watch Darth Vader's story in episode 2 and episode 3.
Oh.
Then you return and you watch the Return of the Jedi in episode 6 at the very end. And the next time that I bother to watch these, I may just watch them in that order.
Yep.
Just to see how that feels. Because I think it does make sense. Because if you watch it from beginning to end, it's just all Darth Vader all the time.
Yep.
You know, it's got nothing to do with Luke, who was everybody's hero when you were 10, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's an interesting little point. So so that's enough out of me. Chad, what have you been watching this week?
I watched two music movies in the last 2 weeks. And I'll talk about one of them now, and I'll save another one for the music section. I'll talk about the Adele Blu-ray live at Royal Albert Hall. Royal Albert fucking Hall, as she says in the Blu-ray. If you want to know about her a little more personal, on a personal level, I really recommend it. I thought it was filmed amazing. They did a great job. There must have been 20 cameras, 20 different angles.
Oh, wow.
They'll use some slow-mo. They used different panning directions, and they caught her at great times, you know, emotional times. They got the reaction of the fans, the audience, and then just the effects in the hall during a few of the different songs. I won't ruin it, but on 1080p Blu-ray, you know, on the big screen, wow. They did a really good job. I really recommend it. I told you guys I'd bought it, but I hadn't had a chance to watch it. We just watched it the other night, and you can tell there's a few songs where she didn't hit the notes, and it was recorded right before she went in for her. It was actually released after she went in for her operation, but it was recorded obviously before. But you could tell some of the notes that she hits on the album 21, she couldn't hit live for whatever reason, and then now obviously we know now why. But it was great. It was fun. You get to see her and who she is. I mean, if you can understand that thick Cockney accent that she has, you know, but because that comes out hardcore. You want to see her with curlers in her hair and no makeup, you'll see that too, which is a big step, especially in entertainment, you know. But she's you know, you can tell she's a 22-year-old woman, and it's fun. It's
really
fun
down to
watch
earth.
That.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, down to earth indeed.
Well, I saw the trailer for it. You sort of get a sense that it's like a culmination of her dream as a little girl to be a star, and here she is.
She lists all the people that she's actually seen in Royal Albert Hall. You know, the Spice Girls was one of the first people she saw there, and she saw Alicia Keys like a few weeks before. And I mean, to her, it was so cool, and that was like you said, it was a dream for her to play there. So I was happy to watch that. And now that I have it, and it comes with a CD too. The Blu-ray version actually comes with a CD that you can, you know, of the live recording, oh, so nice. You can listen to it whenever you want. So
right on.
I recommend.
Cool.
Do all Blu-rays come with a digital download so you can watch it on your iPhone?
No, not at all.
No, that's a Disney thing, Peyton.
Okay.
No, yeah. It's not just Disney.
Well, not just Disney, but I mean, it started off with Disney, but I think it's by select, you know, discs. It's not every disc does it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them do it now, though. Mm. The big ones that come out now, they all do it.
Well, you really have to start doing it, because, I mean, there's no other way to justify a physical media purchase, right? I mean, like, if I can get, I mean, now that I can get 1080p on my Apple TV. I mean, if I have a fast enough internet connection and I want to watch, you know, and I have, you know, a system that'll take the 5.1 surround or more, you know, then I don't need a Blu-ray. You know, I can watch Star Trek, you know, the J.J. Abrams in HD surround sound from my Apple TV for $7.99.
Yeah.
You know, or you can buy it and own it for $20 or something. Yeah, it's on Netflix. That's right.
On Netflix too. So.
Yeah. And if Netflix starts doing surround sound, I think they might have announced that too. I could be incorrect, so don't quote me on that. I know they're doing HD, but I don't know if they're doing surround sound.
You guys hear the Harry Potter trilogy is coming out? I mean, the Harry Potter series is coming out as like a big collector's edition.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it comes in a big trunk and everything. I think the price point is something like $500, but pre-order on Amazon is $3-something. It's got like 18 discs or 30 discs. It's like a giant, giant set. Because it's got like all the Blu-ray, and then it has everything on DVD, and all the behind the scenes stuff, and
when they came out with that, the first part one of the last two movies, they were dirt cheap at Future Shop for like $6 a disc, and I bought them all then just to have for whenever I have kids, you know, that I think that they'd be fun for them.
The DVDs or the Blu-rays?
DVDs. Don't waste money on for that. I'm not that big of a fan.
Yeah. You know, well, so. I mean, and Sony DVD player or Blu-ray player does a good job of upscaling anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, I guess we can move on to what we have been reading. I will start off with a somber note. This is a book that I had when I was a kid, or at least borrowed from somebody when I was a kid. I don't have the book anymore, but I do have prints somewhere. I don't know where, but in a black folder. With one of his paintings on the front, I have a set of Ralph McQuarrie prints, and he was the concept designer and painter behind the original Star Wars trilogy, the designer that came up with a lot of the look of that series, and he passed away on March 3rd. He was 82, survived by his wife. I believe her name is Joan. I could be mistaken. But we'll have a link to ralphmcquarrie.com in the show notes, and there's also a link to his art on Kotaku, which did a tribute on Monday, which is the first day that they ran a story after he passed away on the 3rd. And I actually do have a quote here from George Lucas, who commented after McQuarrie's death, and said that his genial contribution in the form of unequaled production paintings propelled and inspired all of the cast and crew of the original Star Wars trilogy. When words could not convey my ideas, I could always point to one of Ralph's fabulous illustrations and say, do it like this. So he was not a young man, but a sad loss on that front either way. And an interesting note that I read on Wikipedia was that he was approached to do the production design for the new trilogy, the prequels, and he turned it down to say, no, I really am flattered by the offer, but let a new artist help you, you know, achieve that dream and have the same experience that I had working on this franchise back in the 70s and the 80s. So.
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
but he's the one that's accredited for Darth Vader looking like Darth Vader, isn't he?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And some of the paintings that I have, like they actually showed Luke fighting in what looks like a gas mask. Like
some of the
paintings are very inspired by kind of World War II-esque type costumes and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, Darth Vader has a little bit of a samurai look to him with the helmet. I think he might have also been responsible for the AT-ATs and the snow speeders, where a lot of his paintings happen to be Hoth paintings.
Did you hear that, Peyton?
the AT-ATs? Yeah.
AT-ATs and the AT-STs. That's. Yeah.
Come away from the edge. From the edge.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Peyton, what have you been reading this week?
Just more kids' books.
More kids' books.
Doing a lot more reading with the boy.
Right on.
And, yeah, so like lately he picked up a... my aunt has a couple of kids who are teenagers now, and she came by a while ago and dropped off a stack about 2 feet high of those, you know, little Disney-style books, as well as like... Same sort of thing as the Dr. Seuss books, same sort of format.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of them is a Dumbo book. And
had that.
Yeah. Yeah, he grabbed that, and he's mad for elephants. Every elephant he sees is a Horton. So he lost his mind at this book. I'm like, oh, Horton. He just kind of loses his mind completely. So
nice.
We sat on the floor and read that for a bit. So yeah, it's fun. He's doing a lot more reading now, and his language is developing along quite nicely. So, you know, 2-3 word sentences are coming out all the time now.
Wow.
And, you know, he's able to say what he wants, and it's a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, geez, I haven't seen him since his birthday.
Yeah, he's still a monster. His clothing he's outgrowing a lot of his stuff, and it's just funny to see. Like, I was at a play thing the other day at the library, and there was these two twin girls running around, and they were two, and they literally came up to his shoulder, and he just turned two. I was like, okay.
Oh my god! You know, you're gonna have one of those moments like Merry and Pippin. The Two Towers, when they're drinking the water in the Ent forest, and one just kind of looks at the other, and they just kind of like fart and grow, and he's going to look at you when he's 15 and goes, "Hey, Dad, watch this," and he grows an inch.
Like, so we were at this play thing, and there's all these kids running around at his play structure, and they're older kids there who are, you know, bigger and rougher and stuff, and I had to remind them, like, you know, gentle, he'll try to do what you're doing, right? Because, you know, because he just, you know, learns by looking, and he doesn't have the coordination or anything now, but he just loves running, and so he'll just run along and fall and bounce off the floor and get up and keep going, right? Anyway, fun times.
No, kids are awesome. Chad, what have you been reading, sir?
I before Christmas, I was reading The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, which is the third book of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series there with Elizabeth Salander. Mm-hmm. It's the new movie that's out in English now. The English version of the movie is out now, Hollywood's version. Anyway, I put it down before Christmas, and I was really into the first two books, but I couldn't just... I've read the first couple chapters of the third book, but put it down, you know, and then I picked up Death of Kings from Bernard Cornwell and all those things, and then I just finally, the other night, I was bored, and I said, well, I'll give her another try, right? And I must have... it wasn't like 3 pages in, a big thing happened, and I'm hooked again. So back into that. That's some messed up stuff. Some of the things that happen, I don't know if you guys have read or watched or seen any of that.
I've heard stuff. That they're good, but I don't know if they really strike me as my kind of book. My sister keeps on suggesting that I should read The Hunger Games, but I haven't found the time for that yet.
Well, anyways, with this, Peyton, what were you going to?
No, I was just thinking the Hunger Games is something I think I might actually give a try before the movies come out.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, yeah, Andrea says it's quite good, and she knows that I like, you know, sci-fi post-apocalyptic. Wow.
Yeah. Poke-apocalyptic?
Poke-apocalyptic.
Poke-apocalyptic espialidocious?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a really bad cereal.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so graphic, these books. And I mean, my God, like the movie, if anybody, you watch the movie that was just released, what goes through with that, the book is obviously way more detailed. So take that and use that as a grain of salt, I guess, if you think. But these books are disturbing at some points, but intriguing too. And so anyways, I started picking that up. I picked that up again and started reading it again. So hopefully I should be done that in a few weeks and that'll be it.
Cool. You reading that on the iPhone?
No. It's my mother-in-law's copy. Actually.
Okay, cool.
She has the paperbacks. Or no, the first two are paperbacks. There's a hardcover. But, yeah. Cool.
Well, we'll stay with you, Chad. And you are the only one that has a music pick this week. So we'll
We'll
let you keep on going.
Yeah. I've always been a Phil Collins fan. I don't know. You know, I tend to bring back the old favorites on the show for some reason, you know, the forgotten favorites maybe even. But I found that HMV, Phil Collins, finally the first farewell tour. It's his DVD. It was filmed in 2004. Two discs. So it's the whole concert. And it was filmed in Paris. And it was really cool. A big crowd. It must be some soccer stadium there. The crowd was right into it, and they're all Phil Collins fans, and the guy's been doing just his own stuff for 30 years, not even to mention when he was in Genesis,
right?
The other band, right? So, I mean, it's funny, I watched it at my in-law's place, and my wife's mom, she's sitting there watching it with us, and she's like, I don't really know much Phil Collins, and after every song, she goes, I know this song, you know, so it goes to show you, and the guy's a percussionist, right? Like he's a drummer. He will say, like, I'm not a great singer, you know, but I'm a percussionist, and I'm telling you, I'm a good percussionist. I know I'm good, right? So when this guy has other drummers with him, you know they're good. And for the first 10 minutes of the DVD, it's him and the other two drummers / percussionists just jamming with drumming, and in 5.1 Dolby, that is a beautiful thing to listen to. These guys are really into it. And then he just, you know, goes into all the old classics and high energy. The band is into it. All his backup singers, they're all having fun, and, you know, and it's really cool. And the other thing with it is that it's an interactive DVD that with each song, there's usually a little symbol pops up in the top, and you just, you know, hit your interact button, whether it's the enter button or whatever, and it'll play the original video. For instance, right?
Oh, nice.
Take Me Home was the encore song that he played, and it showed the original video, and the video he's traveling all around the world, Take Me Home, and yeah, I really recommend that too, if you're a fan of Phil Collins, that is. So
right on.
And what else? There was one other thing there too. Oh, there was a forgotten TV sitcom special that he did back in like the late 80s. And like Bruce Willis was in it, John Travolta, name like huge actors that became big again in the 90s, middle to late 90s. He had them on his show when they plateaued kind of thing and were kind of on a downward slope. So he got them all. Like like Vanessa Williams was in it. All these people that were kind of like, they were somebody and then kind of like lost their fame and were like,
I think I might have seen that.
Yeah, probably. And it's about
I mean, back when it first aired.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. But that's what he was told, the forgotten episode. And anyways, it's about the dog on tour with them. And Phil Collins has got an amazing sense of humor. He's really funny. If you have ever heard him talk or seen interviews of him. So anyways, it was funny to watch that too. So
the only complaint I have about Phil Collins is that he's so prolific. Like everybody does know who he is. That when he did the songs and the music for Disney's Tarzan,
yeah,
it felt like the Phil Collins musical.
Like
I really, every time there was a song, I stopped thinking about the movie and started thinking about Phil Collins. I don't know why. I was a big Genesis fan. I used to like them a lot.
Tarzan came out after Aladdin. Lion King.
Yes.
So, I mean,
right. That was the formula.
Yeah, big shoes to fill with Elton John, right? So they probably went, we've got a decent story, but we need to knock it up that next notch and maybe we'll...
it needs a song. It needs an I want song.
I want it. I want song. It
needs a villain. Exactly. Yeah, who has a song?
So who was the main voices in Tarzan? I don't remember.
I just remember
Phil Collins did the music.
Minnie Driver was the girl.
Yeah.
I don't
Whoopi
think...
Goldberg was, or Whoopi, was it Whoopi Goldberg?
No,
or
no,
was
it was Rosie O'Donnell was an elephant.
Rosie O'Donnell, yeah.
No, she was an ape. And who was the elephant? It was, what's his face? Newman.
Newman, yeah.
Yeah, from Seinfeld.
Okay,
I remember his name, the guy from Jurassic Park. Nah. And I don't think the lead Tarzan guy was anybody special. I think
he was the bad guy in Ghost. I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah,
now.
Okay.
That's IMBD it here now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I guess I can just quickly move on while Peyton's looking that up. This is where we would normally have... What's that?
Someone said Wayne Knight. Sorry.
Oh. This is where we would normally have our email section. We don't have any email this week, so I'll keep this very short in the essence of time. The email address is thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Send us a line about anything you want. We will read it on the air. And thank you very much for contributing to the show.
Want email.
First. Tony Goldwyn was the guy's name for Tarzan.
Yes. He was in Ghost.
Yeah. Sure.
And also had Lance Hendrickson.
Bishop?
Yeah, Bishop was Kerchak, the father ape, anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right, he was, yeah.
Deep voice.
Who was the villain?
Deep voice.
The villain?
Yeah.
Brian Blessed was the villain.
Hmm.
Clayton. Let's see, yeah. And I think he just...
Hello?
Did we lose Peyton?
Bye-bye, Peyton.
Bye-bye. That's funny. I make a gun noise and Skype cancels Peyton's connection.
Peyton is now talking to himself.
Might be a voice actor guy.
Oh. No, he was... Well, wow, he's still talking. He's Peyton, I'm going to have to stop you, dude. We lost you for probably about a minute.
Well, I heard seconds. You guys talking, so...
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah, we couldn't hear anything about what you were saying. So, sorry, what was it? Something about a voice actor?
Oh, no, the guy who was Clayton... was Brian Bless, and I think it can be appearing in The Hobbit. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. Hobbit. When is The Hobbit again?
December.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very cool. So with that, we can move on to the last section, the Internet Minute, where we share some of the cool things that we found online. And I had a really, really hard time trying to figure out which one that I wanted to share. I'm just going to pick the one that sticks out the most. And that is the Darth Maul Returns on BuzzFeed.com. For anybody that's following Star Wars, there's actually an ongoing TV series on Cartoon Network that is a stylistic 3D animation that takes place during the Clone Wars. It's got Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin and all the main characters and stuff in it. And they're bringing back Darth Maul for the finale of the season. And the trailer, I gotta tell you, man, It looks really cool. Like, it's got me back into finding ways to watch this show. I stopped not for disinterest, but just kind of lack of time and, you know, no access to it, watching the Clone Wars and about mid-season two. And it was starting to get dark. Like, people were dying, you know, like, it wasn't a fluffy cartoon for kids. It had some cool pathos in it. And apparently it just gets better and better and better. And a lot of other podcasters I follow are really liking the show. And if you watch this trailer that we will have linked in the show notes, I mean, it is sick. The nice. Amount of the lightsaber work. I mean, really, it's almost like Star Wars was meant for cartoon, you know, like it almost the way that all the things that have to happen with the lightsabers and things. And they've also got these Dark Sisters. I can't remember if that's the correct term for them, but it's essentially the disciples of Count Dooku before he dies. He kind of tries to raise his own Sith minions, and it's all women.
Okay.
And Ventress, I think, is her name. She's got like the dual hooked lightsabers. Anyway, really, really cool stuff. So check that trailer out if you have time. Peyton, what is your pick this week?
Just one pick?
Okay. I'm just trying to move things along. If you've got a couple, that's all good.
Okay, no, just a couple random things. One is an interesting article or study done by a couple scientists, researchers at the University of Sydney. Basically saying that the warp drive in Star Trek, if it actually existed, would be a horrible, horrible thing. because I'll just read a little excerpt here. It's saying basically space is not an empty void between point A and point B. Rather, it's full of particles that have mass and some that don't. And what the researchers say essentially is that these particles can get swept up in a warp bubble. So if you're traveling faster than the speed of light, then all of this gets focused in the region of space that you stop at and then basically explodes and, yeah, and disintegrates everything in there. As well, the longer you're in warp drive mode, the more of these particles get sucked up in it and the greater the release. And there's no real upper limit to how big the explosions can get. So if you're in warp drive long enough, you can essentially destroy the universe. So it's just, you know.
The kind of Star a bad Trek thing, guys would so. Come up with some tachyon emitter that would displace that.
Yes, I guess. But, you know, it's one more point, you know, for Star Wars versus Star Trek. But
can you reverse the deflector disc to create a tachyon field? And
yeah, that fixes everything. Yeah.
The hydrogen collectors on the warp nacelle cells actually collect the hydrogen, so that's one thing out of the way.
Yes.
I am so impressed that you know that.
Oh, man, I used to have the technical manual. It's still in my house somewhere.
Oh, my God.
I have the TNG technical manual somewhere.
That's great.
I should look that up.
Nerd!
Nerd cred for the week.
Yeah, we need like a trumpet fanfare for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Lock,
yeah.
Ready to rock, boys.
Yeah. So I just have two other quick ones there. One is sent by Donald there. It's a working, how to make a working lockable papercraft safe, which is pretty sweet. And the link's in the show notes as well. A little something for GIS Gamer for Jocelyn there. I know people who listen to this are fans of the game Portal. You guys still there?
Yep.
Okay, no, I just got a beep in my ear there, sorry. Anyway, someone's taken Portal, and they've included the aspects of that game in with Super Mario Brothers. So you are Mario traveling through the different levels, and you have access to the Portal gear. So it's an actual game you can download from a website called stabyourself.net/Mario0. And the link's in the show notes. Worth checking. It's a fun video for it. And it looks like it really upped the excitement level for playing the old Mario games. Anyway, on to you, Chad.
I can't top that stuff. Part two of Under the Influence, the podcast I'd mentioned the last time I was on the show 2 weeks ago. It's just part two of the Steve Jobs, the marketing genius of Steve Jobs, kind of takes it to like from their pinnacle and how the Super Bowl ads and Joe Namath. He linked in how Joe Namath back in the 70s and what he brought to the game and what Steve Jobs brought to, you know, marketing and stuff like that. So it's a final culmination of that podcast, and there's a link there that we'll put in the show notes so everybody can watch and finish it off. There was one more thing I wanted to say. Oh, I noticed GIS Gamer again. She posted something on her Twitter feed about ThinkGeek, and I haven't been on there in a long time. Well, talk about getting lost in the internet for 2 hours. Go on ThinkGeek and go, oh, my God, I want that. Oh, my God, what about this? And you go there and you go that, and in 2 hours, your life is gone. And you have no idea. It's all in your history, on your cookies and stuff, on your browsing history, on your web browser. But
well, at least your ads on Facebook are going to be really cool now.
Well, they're the ones who came up with the little arcade style console for the iPad.
Yeah, the iCade.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they came up with that as a joke 1 year for April Fool's, and then it was so much demand for it they actually made it. So yeah,
now you can watch Asteroids in 1080p.
Awesome. That's bloop, wicked.
Bloop, 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 bloop,
pew, pew. It's surround bloop, sound. Bloop, bloop,
bloop. Simulated surround sound.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like your surround sound is like the keyboard concert by Ross on Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His music.
Yeah.
His
or music. Or the Lasers from, what's that Australian comedy band, Peyton? You know them.
Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah. Fun times. Well, since you guys have gone with some extra picks, I do have two more that I'm going to share real quick. The Game of Thrones theme by the actors that play Sansa, Arya, and Bran. It is a YouTube video where instead of the music to the show, they basically sing it, and it is hilarious. Really easy to Google, I'm sure, right now, but you can also find it in our show notes. And last but not least, The Simpsons also did a spoof of the Game of Thrones intro, and that was on what website was it on? I think it was io9.com, and I'm sure it's also elsewhere. Yeah. And they did basically Springfield with all the gears and the everything's rising and kind of being made as it the camera flies over.
Burns is landing and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very fun stuff. Those two moments. I thought it ties in with our Game of Thrones stuff very well. But I just because I was so Star Wars brained this week. Well, I'm always Star Wars brained, but this week was all about Star Wars for me. So I thought I'd go with the original Darth Maul Returns for my pick. Yeah, well, that is the end of the show. That wraps up episode 11. And as I mentioned before, we'd love to hear from our listeners on just about any topic. If you like something that we say, if you don't like something that we say, if we've made a mistake and you'd like to correct us, or if you just want to share your thoughts, please send us an email to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Our show notes are thanks to Jocelyn from The Gamers Inn. You can find her and her co-host Ryan over at thegamersinpodcast.com. You can find all of our stuff online under one simple heading, The Citadel Cafe, on Facebook, on Twitter, on our blog. It's all The Citadel Cafe, including our custom domain on Facebook. Thank you for everybody that liked the page. We now officially have the URL, facebook.com/TheCitadelCafe. So that is
booyah.
All the different places you can find us and interact with us and our show on the interwebs. This is also where we would put in an iTunes review. We don't have any new reviews this week, but it's one of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners. If you like the show, give us a rating, preferably 5. Leave us a review, and we might share your thoughts right here on the next episode. I have been Joel Duggan. Since the day I was born, you can find my comic and pretty much all that I am up to online at starcrossedonline.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Google+ with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
CardboardTreehouse.com and Twitter with @PeytonFrancis. Yeah, and the face in the book, all that fun stuff.
Easy to find. Mr. Merlin, what about you?
You can follow me on Twitter. Yeah, Chad Merlin.
Fantastic. You have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, we are easy, and we are cheap, but you can only pick two.
Cheap like as in combo at a fast food restaurant?
Yes. Not healthcare in Mexico.
Oh, boy. Start him up the show.
My nerd is locked, cocked, and ready to rock.
I just pictured somebody in a gimp mask tied up in the corner now.
A nerdy gimp mask.
The Vulcan ears.